Welcome to my podcast called You Must Be Out of Your Mind. My name is Dr. Don Wood. Everyone has experienced some trauma at times during their life. These traumatic events and experiences create a significant impact on how your mind works on a day-to-day basis. At the same time, creates long-term effects on your emotional and physical health. It will interfere with your ability to stay present and in the moment. After years of research, I used my knowledge of neuroscience to create what I call a memory reset. This memory reset reduces and eliminates the impact of the trauma and allows you to experience peace and clarity. My podcast will share many stories of people experiencing similar symptoms to you and how their lives have been positively impacted by our TIP program. I can't wait to share with you how the impossible is possible and why you must be out of your mind. And there it is.
Welcome to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And as you know, we always bring in some very exciting guests that can share some tremendous insights. And today I have another great guest, Eddie Duvalier, who I met a number of years ago. We have a lot in common, like he said, besides just our good looks and hairstyle, right? We're going to share some really great ideas today. So welcome, Eddie, to You Must Be Out of Your Mind.
Very excited to be here.
Very good. So I know you're doing a lot of work. You know, your background is obviously in therapy as well. So doing that, can you give us a little bit of a background on what you've been doing and what your experience has been in this industry?
Yeah, I've been working in the mental health arena and in the wellness as a practitioner with prevention, natural health, holistic, and naturopathic. So I saw that connection really was real in terms of healing, not just sending people off if they came with a little mood disorders, depression, anxiety, send them off to psychiatrists. I started realizing that we could really use this resource of natural products and prevention to help heal. So back in about 2007, I went back to school and I got my degrees and I got certified in as a nutritionist and a fitness specialist. It's just all encompassing, it's all incorporating. So it's not a separate thing when you're trying to get well. They're all important, mind, body, and spirit. So I've engaged in that, and I went back and got my PhD in counseling, and that really opened my eyes.
Yeah, it was the same with me as well. So I went in looking for answers for my daughter, who was dealing with a number of health issues that we later found out were really connected to her early childhood trauma that we were unaware of. And so that sent me out on my search trying to find answers. And again, like you said, everything was all built around living, managing, and coping with trauma. Nobody was talking about fixing it.
Right.
So through, you know, all the research that I did and you know, all the work, you know, I developed this program called TIP, the Inspired Performance Program. And the idea behind it is it's focused on performance, not trauma. Because what I always say is that trauma interferes with our ability to perform at our highest level. So let's get to the root of the issue and clear the trauma up so that you could perform at a higher level. So I work with a lot of, you know, high performers, executive CEOs, world-class athletes. And the idea is to be able to get them to raise that next level, get that extra gear. And we've got some just amazing results of people breaking world records. And because I say that when we have this unresolved trauma, it actually affects the ATP, the mitochondria, and the cells. And so when we release that trauma, we increase performance. So with your background in, you know, wellness, nutrition, all of those things, have you seen similar things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even in my own life, I, you know, I experienced trauma, you know, coming from being orphaned out at birth, just kind of trying to discover and find myself. I didn't know my history, but I was left with genetics and, you know, whatever carried over from my parents. So not knowing my history is what probably inspired me to get into this field. And at a young age, I started to try to find myself, but I had no foundation to go by. I didn't have a family history.
Right.
So that got me more interested in health and wellness overall. Back in the 80s, when I started doing this, it's incredible how much it's changed. The protocol of wellness has changed. It's very exciting where we are today as compared to where we were in the 80s. And so much has changed in neuroscience. Just this month alone, there is about 4 or 5 markers for Alzheimer's that we didn't even have that are discovered. Well, yep. That's exciting news for us when it comes to mental health. MTHFR, homocysteine, how all these relate to depression. So it's exciting times right now for any wellness practitioner to be right now. Just even 10 years ago, you remember the low-fat diet craze.
Yep.
That turned out to be really a misnomer that, we shouldn't be eliminating fats.
Right.
That wasn't healthy for us. So much has changed, and it's very exciting times to be here. But we have to be open also to change. That's what's important.
Yeah. And that's what I sort of found. Like, the way I look at it, and this is sometimes when I have people come in and I work with them, the first thing I say to them, there's nothing wrong with you and there's nothing wrong with your mind, right? Something is affecting the way your mind is operating. Let's get to the root of the problem rather than manage this symptom. Mm-hmm. And I talk about, like, for example, when people say I have depression, I'll say, well, depression is a symptom. It's not what you have. You didn't catch depression. Mm-hmm. Depression is a symptom of something. What is your mind trying to get done? And what I find a lot of times is what I say is depression is a function of the brain, not a dysfunction. It's actually trying to accomplish something. It's shutting down because it can't solve the problem. So it's trying to stop some pain. So what I always talk about is every time you have an emotion, a feeling, or a sensation, your mind is calling for an action, right? The purpose of fear is to escape a threat. The purpose of anger is to attack a threat. So if trauma is looping, constantly activating your nervous system into a fear response or anger response, but you can't solve it because it's not happening. It's over. But right. Your mind keeps calling for the action. How does it protect you? It shuts down. Depression is the absence of emotions. It stops using the emotions because it can't get the action. Once you resolve what the mind has been trying to get done, which is generally usually a trauma response, then it resolves the problem. The depression will lift.
Right. So it leads me to the reason I really reached out to you is that one of the big things I do is the 3 P's. I sent that to you, is pre-screening.
Mm-hmm.
Very important that people pre-screen now. We have the technology. Before, we had to do guesswork and we did some general blood work, but we could actually do pre-screenings. And then after pre-screenings, then we go to the next step, that would be prevention from furthering symptoms and problems, disease, and then the protocol.
Yep.
So we have to follow a protocol, not just get a diagnosis. So what I found in my practice is a lot of people come to me with anxiety and depression. When I told them to pre-screen certain things like blood sugars and their cholesterol, their blood work, their CBC panels, they were coming back with insulin resistance,
mm-hmm.
which can affect their mood, depression, anxiety. If you have yep. low sugar, you're going to have symptoms of depression and anxiety. So there was a big connection with people coming to me with depression and anxiety and having prediabetes.
Yep.
That can only be found through pre-screenings, not going to psychiatrists. And also this MTHFR, which we found that if they have the genetic mutation, then they're at risk for depression. So a simple pre-screening of taking your MTHFR results, let's see if your homocysteine levels are high.
Yep.
For your audience, if your homocysteine levels are high, you have a high risk of depression.
Yep.
And that connection has been made. 10 years ago, we didn't really know this. So Prozac, and the other antidepressants have a place, but those are temporary fixes. We want people to get well. And I found this out through my own pre-screenings myself. I was having symptoms of prediabetes and didn't know it. I thought I was perfectly healthy.
Yep.
So this is another tool in our arsenal that we can help in the area of mental health and wellness.
Yeah, and it's making that connection. It's thinking outside the box. You know, right. My daughter developed Crohn's and a second autoimmune called idiopathic pulmonary hemosiderosis, which was another autoimmune disorder. And in both those cases, they told us there's no cure for either one of those, and we don't know what causes them. And so basically, they just said, you live, manage, and cope with it. So put her on a steady dose of steroids to bring down the inflammation. They ended up cutting out 24 inches of her intestines over that four operations. And they said, well, there's no answer here. You just manage it. And what, from my research, what I discovered is that unresolved trauma creates inflammation in the body. Inflammation is a response to trauma. Right. The problem is the inflammation is coming from the trauma loop, which keeps running, keeping the inflammation active. So as long as the mind still thinks that that trauma is real and happening now, it's going to keep that cell danger response, that activation of the nervous system, engaged. And so as soon as we resolve the trauma, we got the trauma cleared, right? She hasn't had a Crohn's flare-up. She hasn't had a lung disorder because we solved the problem, right? We went to the root. Otherwise, she'd have been on, they said, she'll just live like this until she eventually ends up with a colostomy bag. That was their answer. Wow. But that's what they're taught. So it's not that they're not smart people. I mean, these doctors are very smart. Yeah. But if you've been trained that there's no answers, right? And you continue just to follow the practice that you've been trained in. I think, you know, I know I did, and it sounds like you did as well. You were looking for other answers. And we found a lot of different ways to heal people.
Yeah, that's right. The three P's are important. Do the pre-screenings, then immediately go into prevention. And then the protocol is extremely important, that people be proactive in their own health. You know, yep. The doctor has a place in your health, but it really, when we leave the doctor's office, it's up to us. And this new discovery in inflammation is amazing. Inflammation and plaque. And then the HPA axis, how exciting that is, that we can connect the brain with the gut. We know how important healthy gut is. And yep. So even addressing that for depression, for trauma, anxiety, things like that, because all those things affect the thought process. The RAS, you know, working with people, the reticular activation system, I work with that. That's to help reprogram people. It's not, I know it sounds kind of weird, but we program ourselves every day with the RAS. And so that's another tool that we have in psychology. But I think what's important is disease has steps and stages. It doesn't just come on us. And that includes our mental health. And so if we fall into deficiency, then we're going to run into problems. And that's where folks like you and I step in, and we can help people. You talked about the mitochondria. We can even look at the telomeres in the DNA and see how fast people are aging. You know, it's premature aging is not normal.
Right.
So what's your real age? You know, if you can do this testing, we could find out your real age. Can you walk 2 or 3 miles a day? You should be able to, even up to your 70s and 80s.
Yep.
You should be able to touch your toes. You should be able to have energy and have mental focus. And how sad it is that people wait until they have symptoms and then they want to do the protocol. Sometimes it's too late.
Yeah. No, so yeah, definitely prevention. But I think, you know, the big thing is, I think what we're doing, and I know I certainly do when I talk to people, is educate them, because they're generally told that, you know, there's nothing you can do, right? This is just the process of aging, right? You're going to get old, right? But why does that have to be? Why can't we do things to prolong our lives and keep our lives healthy? We should be able to stay healthy. But unfortunately, our diet and everything and all the stresses that are going on in the world, and then you add in trauma, particularly from childhood, that's having a major effect on the way your mind works. So even though you may not have any current stress, if you have the old trauma from your childhood still running, that's as if you're still in the trauma. Yeah. And that's going to have a major effect on your mental and physical health. And it's going to start to affect, you know, the gut process as well, which is going to constantly be activating our sympathetic nervous system response.
Are you tired of dealing with stress, anxiety, panic attacks, depression, even feeling broken? Have traumatic events and experiences in your life created post-traumatic stress for you? Perhaps you're an athlete, an executive, trying to reach that next level of performance. Well, there's nothing wrong with you, and there's nothing wrong with your mind. Your mind is dealing with some glitches and error messages as a result of these traumatic events or disturbing events earlier in your life. It's interfering with your ability to stay present because the memory keeps on looping, activating your nervous system. I've helped thousands of people deal with anxiety, panic attacks, depression, feeling that sense of brokenness. We can clear that in as little as 4 hours. Check out our website, inspiredperformanceinstitute.com, and check out some of the stories and testimonials. Some of these may relate to what you've experienced in your life, and we look forward to helping you reach your next level of performance. And there it is.
And I always talk about, I don't know how you feel about this, but one of the things that I always talk about is when people say, oh, that triggers me. I said, I don't like that word.
Yeah.
I said, it activates your nervous system. It doesn't trigger it. Trigger to me always sounded negative and violent. And I don't believe your mind is being negative and violent. I think it's trying to protect you. So it's activating some sort of a response. But chances are it could be an error message coming from the trauma loop, activating your nervous system. Once we get that cleared up, now you can stay present. And so if there's a threat that comes in real time, right, we're designed to handle that. That's the purpose of the sympathetic nervous system. It's an emergency response system designed to turn on when there's a threat and shut off when there's no threat. And it works perfectly in the animal world. Unfortunately, we store all this memory of all these events and experiences, which keep activating our nervous system. That's the glitches and error messages I always talk about.
Yeah. I want to encourage your audience to take the time every day, slow down a little bit. We have a generation that lives in the sympathetic nervous system throughout the whole day, even throughout the night.
Yep.
We don't cut this cortisol off. So if you have trauma, it's going to accentuate it even more. You're not going to sleep well. You're not going to feel good throughout the day. And then that affects our decision making. But I had a sleep disorder at a very young age because of trauma. And I want to encourage your audience to use your method because it works.
Yep.
I had that trauma erased where I had the fear to go to sleep. And that was due to bonding issues. I wasn't able to bond with my mother at birth. And so that sympathetic nervous system, that adrenaline at birth and at a young age stayed with me. And it was really, really tough to get up in the morning, go to school, have a job. But ever since I did the trauma resolution, I'm sleeping like a baby.
It's interesting because one of the things too that I talk about, for example, if your child is growing up in that kind of an environment, whether it's intentional or not, but there's all that stress.
Yeah,
I run into so many people who talk about, oh, I have ADHD or my child has ADHD. And what I say to them is ADHD is a coping mechanism. It's not a disorder. They're calling it a disorder. And so the way I explain it is if you and I here, Eddie, are having a discussion and we get into a disagreement, you have the choice of either walking away or fighting back. A child doesn't have that. Right. So when they're growing up in this very stressful environment that's threatening or even just stressful, what are their options? Zero. They have no option. They can't fight. They can't flight. So what they do is they basically tune out. So it's literally like they put their hands over their ears and they stop listening, stop focusing. And so now in these formative years of development, this brain is being trained to tune out the noise.
Yeah.
And then we take that child, we stick him into a classroom and say, now you need to focus on what this teacher's talking about. You need to learn. Well, they've trained their entire lives up to that point to not do that.
Yeah.
And then we want to diagnose them that there's something wrong with them. When in actual fact, we just need to retrain the brain. Right. But the system isn't prepared for that.
No.
So the first thing they want to do is they want to put them on Adderall, or they want to put them on some form of amphetamine to speed up the brain. And then what they'll say is, oh, I can focus now. But your brain could always do that if you trained it right. You didn't need the medication. The medication is proving that you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't share with you. I just retired from the Seminole County Sheriff's Office. I was a contracted counsel there.
Oh, okay. Very good. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that you were doing that. Yep.
Professional intake counselor. And I never heard of ADD when I was a kid or bipolar. We never heard of that stuff. And we probably grew up with, I don't know, better or worse nutrition. I'm not sure. But the environment, I think, was a little more stable and structured. I've never seen so much instability in families that I have in the past 18 years. With these kids coming in, getting in trouble, when you get to the root of the problem, it really wasn't them. It was their environment. And so I decided to take that on for 18 years, and I helped thousands of kids, and not just with their court issues, their legal problems, but I took advantage of everything, nutrition, spiritual aspect, their careers, planning, but most importantly, their brain health, just where they were as youth and juveniles, how they're going to grow out of this. You know, that metamorphosis is going to happen. Hormones are going to change. But I gave them a scale, you know, from four quarters of life. I gave them this scale that from 1 year old to 17, things are going to change rapidly.
Right.
But once they get into their 20s, how much more rapid does it change? But then it kind of starts to stabilize. It's very, very important in the beginning that they have the right nutrients and they're dealing with the trauma, with their environment. It's so important that once they leave home, that we've given them the foundation that they can start making their own choices.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I grew up in this perfect environment. Wasn't absolutely perfect, but it was pretty ideal. Yeah. My brother and sister and I can't ever remember our parents arguing. They never raised their voice.
I remember you said that. I couldn't believe that. I
it was incredible. I share, just to give people an example of how different this was. One time when I was about 5 or 6, I saw my dad. He was writing out, he was sitting at his desk, and I didn't know what he was doing. So I sat down and said, what are you doing? And he says, oh, he thought this was a great teaching moment. He says, I'm paying our bills. So let me show you how this works. So he shows me how he gets a bill, like the electric bill, and he writes a check, and he asked me to help him can you put the check and the bill in the envelope, seal the envelope, stamp it, right? So I'm all excited because I'm helping my dad. And then he asked me, he says, can you run this envelope down to the mailbox on the corner and put it in there for me? So I run down there. I'm all excited. I come running back for my next assignment. And my dad's not sitting at the desk right now, but I see all the other bills and envelopes. So I just start stuffing bills and envelopes, sealing them up, putting stamps on them, about 15 of them. And I run them all down to the mailbox and mail them. And my dad, so I come back again, I'm waiting for my dad. He comes in and he looks at the desk and he goes, where are all the bills? Where are the envelopes? And I said, I mailed them all. And you know what he did, Eddie? He laughed.
Wow.
And he says, I don't think I explained that very well.
Oh man, I wish I could take back some things like that, you know, that you look back and in hindsight, you say, I should have just been patient about that. So that's a blessing that you.
Oh, it really was. I mean, he got it. I didn't make the mistake. He did.
Yeah.
He didn't explain that, right? So he took responsibility and was like, well, of course the kid's going to do that. I didn't tell him really how to follow up on this. Yeah. And so, but I'm growing up in that world. So I always felt safe. And I've been on podcasts and people will say, what's the best advice you can give to parents? And I said, make your home safe. Because if your home is safe, they have a place to land. They don't feel like they're in this constant state of flight.
That's right.
I'm sure working at the sheriff's department with all the youth that you were working with, you saw these kids constantly in a state of flight. They had no place to land. You were probably the only place that they could land for a short period of time to talk to somebody, right? To get some help. But most of their life, they're spent in flight.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of apathy as well, because after a while you do burn out trying to survive. It happens in marriages and any relationship. And I saw these kids come in with this apathy about life. And you know, the gaming and all that has can only do so much to distract them. At some point, you have to look in the mirror. And so I was that mirror for them short term, but I did not leave them empowered, disempowered. I left them empowered. I gave them so many tools that I was given throughout my life. And I'm pretty lucky to escape addiction, to have escaped any kind of neurotic, you know, behaviors, psychotic. I can't say the same for my siblings, my foster siblings, my adopted brothers and sisters. You know, they did fall into addiction because we lived in a jungle. You know, we had 11 brothers and sisters from different families living in this foster home. So I was given a gift of serenity early in my life.
Peace. Yeah.
And I pursued that peace at a very young age. I'm lucky that I did this because I grew up in New York in the 70s. And, you know, nobody taught me that.
Right.
It was a gift that I was given to me. So I'm still able to extend that. People feel a sense of peace around me and that, you know, more of that sanguine temperament. And, you know, phlegmatic temperament. But we don't want people to just survive. And that's why we have folks like you and I. And the other thing is to live to our potential.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't want to just survive. We don't want to what I call be on borrowed time.
Right.
When you get into disease, whether it's mental illness or physical disease, you know, I hate to say this term to people, but you're on borrowed time.
Yep.
And that's not how you should live your life. You should be looking forward right into your old age, your golden years, to still be healthy, not be in a walker, not be in physical decline and mental decline. And, you know, I'm 61. I'm fairly young, but I'm not very young. My body has changed.
Yep.
I went for a bunch of tests. I did my neurotransmitters. I did all my heart work. My real age is about 40.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
I went on the treadmill and the cardiologist said, oh my goodness, what's your date of birth? And my wife was right there. And he looked at my wife. He said, superb.
That's great.
You know, that's the kind of things that we want to give to people. You know, when you help someone overcome trauma, you've done your work. You want people to say, I can live now. I can feel my feelings again. I can look at my family and my husband without having a panic attack or dreading sleep, dreading going to work. So that's important. And don't let fear get in the way, because that's what stops people from changing is fear.
Yeah. Well, we've got, I know I haven't had a chance to share with you, but we got a patent on this whole program.
Oh, wow.
The patent is for panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and post-traumatic stress. And we've tied it to some technology. So there's a device that we're going to be announcing that you can wear on your ear that will be able to detect a panic attack up to an hour before.
Oh, wow.
And it'll alert you to it. And then, as you know, after understanding how the program works, we can shut it down, right? Simply by following the steps that we told you to take. Yeah. And it'll alert you on your phone at the same time and give you all the tools that you need to shut it down. So we're getting phenomenal success with panic attacks, shutting them down. And the device is now going to just provide that extra sense of security that if you've experienced panic attacks, that now you'll know if one's coming, because the panic attack is happening below your conscious awareness. And so what we can do is actually starting up to an hour before, but people aren't aware of it. So we can pick up on that. We're monitoring the oxygen. And so when the oxygen starts to drop, that's the sign that it's starting to come.
Yeah.
And so then you'll get the alert on your phone and we'll be able to shut it down.
So you won't be using the brown bag anymore.
Nope. So we can, so we can shut all that off. So we've had people, I just recently had a guy, 45 years of panic attacks.
Wow.
And just after going through, you know, the 4-hour program I take him through and following his audios for the next 30 days, they're completely gone. He's not on his Xanax. He's not having panic attacks anymore. And he suffered for 45 years with them.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. And when he met with me, he said, I heard that you could eliminate panic attacks in like 4 hours. And I said, yeah, we can. Yeah. I said, it's a glitch, right? Your mind is thinking there's some threat going on and it's trying to protect you, but it can't find the threat.
Sure.
So it goes into a panic state when the threat, it keeps getting physiological messages from the body that the body's starting to change, but you're not consciously aware of it. And the mind's already looking for danger, but it can't find it. And so after I wrote the patent, I found a study at a Southern Methodist University that had 2,000 hours of data on panic attacks. And during the study, they had 13 people experience a panic attack. All 13 people said it came on instantly, but they had them all monitored. And they said there were all kinds of physiological signs that it was coming. They just didn't know it. So it validated my patent. And so when the examiner looked at the patent, at first they declined all our claims until they truly understood what we were doing. They said, aren't you just monitoring vitals? And we said, no, we're monitoring vitals to alert them so that then they follow the protocol we just gave them. And then they can shut it down with the protocol, right? Before they ever have to experience any of the signs. So when they gave us the patent, they added in anxiety and post-traumatic stress with it, which is pretty amazing.
Oh, no, I definitely want to get this information from you because, you know, sometimes we're desperate. You know, we don't want to send them to hospital or have them Baker acted or, you know, back to the psychiatrist for more medicine. So we need this technology and I need it desperately. We're getting to start a new group in January of youth and families that are have a lot of problems.
Right.
And so one of my goals is to work with the nuclear family. Keep the family strong because we're losing the grip on the family.
Yep.
And it's going to trickle down to the youth, to the kids. And so I want people listening to know that you're not weak. There's nothing wrong with you, that you're actually a very strong person.
Yep.
Your body is doing exactly how God intended it to be.
Exactly. Yep.
You have that lighthouse on, it's called the amygdala. How do you pronounce it? Amygdala?
Amygdala. Amygdala. Yeah.
You know, that is a wonderful tool, very small part of our brain, but, you know, the size of an almond, they say, right?
Yep.
But it's doing some powerful lighthouse work. It's always on scanning for danger. Well, unfortunately, it's been hijacked. And your technology, your new science can give people hope. And where they don't have to feel like there's a bear at the door every time they look around.
Yeah, we can shut off that activation, right, in advance. And that brings about tremendous peace.
Yeah.
And so it's the way we're supposed to be living, as you know, right? God designed us to heal.
Yep.
What's interfering with our ability to stay present in the moment is this trauma loop. And so once we can eliminate that trauma loop, now you can stay present. And then we just teach you how to continue how to live present in the moment, right? And so the same thing, so I'm working with people in addiction, right? And what I say addiction is, this is my impression, addiction is not a disease. It's a code. The brain is constantly coding.
Right.
So if you have pain, mostly emotional pain, but it could be physical too, right? Your mind doesn't want to be in pain. So if you found a resource that temporarily stops the pain, right, your mind is going to code that. And every time you continue to use that resource, you're building and strengthening the code. And so then what happens is they'll tell you, well, there's something wrong with you. You're broken. You're defeated. You should be ashamed of yourself. And it was like, the human mind doesn't want to be in pain. And if you find a resource that stops the pain, doesn't it make sense that you would do that?
Yeah.
Because your subconscious mind doesn't see consequences. It's always in the moment, always present.
Right.
So I had a lady come in who'd been 7 years on heroin. And she said to me, I told my therapist I was coming to see you. And he told me that I have to be honest with you and tell you up front that I have self-destructive behavior. And I smiled at her. I said, really, what would make you think you're self-destructive?
Yeah.
And she looked so surprised because she said, well, I'm sticking a needle with heroin in my arm. Don't you think that's self-destructive? I said, no, I don't. I think you're trying to feel better. And I'll bet you when you stuck the needle in your arm, you felt better. Now, the substance is destructive, but you're not destructive. I says, I'm assuming you've had a lot of trauma. She goes, oh, you have no idea. I said, well, I have a pretty good idea because people don't stick needles in their arm with heroin, right, who aren't in pain. It's all coming from pain. And your mind found a resource to stop the pain temporarily. And it built a code to protect you.
It's critical that we practitioners teach people. I think of the word hijack as you're talking. Mm-hmm. You know, we have the amygdala hijack. And then we look at the dopamine hijack.
Yep.
You know, that loop of dopamine that pretty much the drug now is taking over. If we can educate people about the brain and how this is happening, then it doesn't look so mysterious. This drug doesn't appear so empowering. You know, when we know that we can do something to heal the brain. And that's where I try to help people, to really educate them how the brain works. Executive functioning, which you've heard, that's really the new word in mental health, especially for young people.
Yep.
Executive functioning is a powerful thing to learn.
Sure.
And we don't hear enough about it.
Yep.
So that's an area that I'm working on with mainly adolescents, to teach them about this transformation in executive functioning. And when we learn about the prefrontal cortex and about disease, addiction falls right in there. And so, you know, dopamine, the different neurotransmitters, glutamate, dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, are all within our control.
Yep.
Medication is not going to fix that problem.
No, I don't know if you saw the most recent study that came out on SSRIs. And they're talking about, they did a study, they took 375 peer-reviewed studies on the chemical imbalance that they say SSRIs resolve, you know, the serotonin imbalance.
Right.
And what they're saying is all these studies came to that conclusion. They've been doing this since the 60s, but what they said is there's really no evidence of that it's true, right? It's not an imbalance, a chemical imbalance, right? So they're doing this hijack of the serotonin, right? Thinking that they're solving the problem, but it's probably not accurate. So that's created a whole bunch of controversy, because there's some people who've been doing this for a long time, prescribing SSRIs, but they're saying there may not be much more difference between that and a placebo. So
yeah, I joke around about that. I say, you know, we used to use 8-tracks. Remember those days?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We thought cassettes were so amazing.
Yep.
Then we went digital. And where are we now?
Yep.
I mean, it's just amazing. So why would we use 8-tracks when we could use something much more advanced?
Yeah.
I see the same thing with medicine. You know, we got to have a new paradigm of treatment. We can't keep going back to the psychiatrist. You know, there is a place for it, but we don't want to in any way discourage people. But look at this technology that you have. Look at the services that I offer. Yeah. You know, neurotransmitter testing, hormone testing, genetic testing, you know, blood work, and fairly inexpensive.
Yeah.
So it's not something that will break the pocket. And so there was a gentleman that at 28, I think, he got colon cancer and stage 3. So they gave him only a few years to live.
Right.
And look at this information. What he learned was getting off the protein diet.
Yeah.
And getting back into eating healthy grains actually reversed stage 3.
Yeah.
But then they asked him one more thing. They said, what else do you think helped you heal? And he said, forgiveness.
Yeah.
I had been walking around with trauma for almost 30 years.
Yep.
Because I think the trauma compromised my immune system, my digestive system. And he thinks that's what gave him the colon cancer at 29 years old, you know, or 30, I can't remember his age, but it was quite a while. And so when he said the word forgiveness, wow, you know, it made me think there was a letting go process.
Yeah. Yep.
Correct?
Oh, yeah. There's a big, you know, connection between that and the brain and disease. And so what I always say is that unresolved trauma creates inflammation. Inflammation compromises the immune system and compromises the neurotransmitters. Right. So what are we going to do? We're going to try to hijack the immune system with steroids. We're going to try to hijack the neurotransmitters by trying to pump in our own artificial neurotransmitters to try to reset the system. Why not just fix the trauma?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be a lot simpler to do as opposed to trying to override all of the symptoms that that we currently could take care of if we can get the mind to come back into balance? It's designed to do that.
Is it something that you could bring in front of Congress or something that people could be made more aware of as part of the health package?
We're doing some of the things we're doing now. We're doing some brain mapping to show the changes in the brain after we take them through the program.
Wow.
What we're showing in one of the studies that we did, we got a 45% change in brain plasticity after going through the program, a 38% normalization of the brain again, going back into normalization. So we're proving more and more that this actually works and there's no drugs involved. It's very simple. It's not even like, as you know, I can take people through this whole program and never know what one trauma is. I do this in groups of 25 or 50 people and nobody has to share their trauma. We can reset the system.
That's amazing.
And it's that simple. And people are like, how do you do that? Right. And I said, well, again, the mind's designed to heal. Right. It's just running on a loop. All we have to do is reset it, right? Reboot the system. Just like, what do you do when your computer gets stuck and it's spinning? We shut it off and turn it back on. Right. That's in essence what we're doing. We're just shutting it down, letting it reboot.
That's why I reached out to you. I was so inspired by the work you're doing. And I spoke with Mark several times and it's just incredible work.
Yeah, it's exciting. You have to come out and see. We've got a hyperbaric chamber now in our center. We've got a theta chamber. We're doing the brain mapping.
Wow.
We're also doing training, just like you talked about, on the cognitive side. So we've got some devices that we can use to help retrain all that, right? That they can use at home on their own. And we can monitor the whole thing and see what's changing, what's working, what's not working. So we got some pretty exciting new developments, you know, we're really excited about it. Even, you know, like I said, even in addiction. So if we can get people out of that mindset that they're broken and defeated in addiction and say, no, there's nothing wrong with you. You had pain and you found a way to stop the pain. That says nothing about your character, morals, willpower, or ethics. It's all about human nature, stopping pain.
Yeah, there's healing, no doubt about it. Now, I've healed, and so that's why I'm in this field. With the help of God, my faith, and just my protocols that I follow, you know, I'm no longer just surviving. I'm living.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting that in that scan you did of me, you discovered arsenic in my blood, in my system.
Yeah.
I did some detoxing. I had no idea, and then also what is it from the tick? What is that?
Lyme disease. Yeah.
Yeah. I had that. And that was through then your scanning.
Yep. It's pretty incredible. The things that show up.
That must've been when I lived up by the woods up in New York.
Yep. Oh, there's so many people with that. A lot of people dealing with it and they don't know it. Right. But it's going to have a major effect.
Everything was on though. The hormone results were exactly when I looked at my blood work. All the markers, the metabolic, everything. So I encourage people to do this. You're still doing the full body scan?
Yep. Wow. We still do that as well. So we do that. We do the brain mapping. We do all of those things. So yeah, you'll have to come out and see the center, what we're doing now. So we're doing a lot more stuff and getting a lot more attention to what we're doing, getting some pretty amazing results. And it reminds me of, I'm writing another book and I'm talking about, I don't know if you've heard of this, the Rosetta effect. Have you ever heard of that?
No, it sounds familiar, but I don't think I've read on it.
It's basically, it was written about Malcolm Gladwell in the book, The Outliers, talked about it. Oh. And basically what it is, which is really fascinating, is in the 1960s, in the early 60s, there's a small town in a small little village community in Pennsylvania called Rosetta. And so the doctor from that area happened to be talking to a doctor from the University of Utah and was telling him about, we have hardly any heart disease here in our community. And so that sent a team of researchers like, because they were having all these problems with heart disease, especially in the 60s. Like, what's going on? What are these people doing? And they went in and studied this town to figure out, what are they doing? They ate terrible, right? They smoked, right? They ate bad diets, right? They did everything wrong. But here was the difference. That small town of Rosetto was basically transplanted from Italy in the 1880s. They came over and settled in this area and stayed as a community. And so there was a sense of community in that area. They all went to church every Sunday, right? They all helped out each other. There was a support group within the community. They were brothers and sisters. If somebody needs help, they all get together. And they reduced all their stress. Even though they were working in very tough conditions, they worked in the quarries in that area, which is hard work, right? There was nobody that sort of put themselves above anybody else. So there was no such thing as wealth or status. They were all the same. And everybody worked together. So that sense of community overrode even the poor stuff that they were doing, which tells you its mind is the most powerful tool you have. Mm-hmm. And if you get control of that, so we're not advocating going out and eating bad, but we're just saying you can override so much when you get the mind back into balance. And that, and then what happened was, now that town, so very quickly within about 10 years, went back to what every other town, but their heart disease was less than half of the other communities around the area. And that was the only thing from the research they could figure out that they did. Totally culture. And all those people stayed together. Families ate together. Families did things together. Like, everything was all built around community and family, which I look at it and I go, that was the life I grew up in. I didn't have that community side, but I had that home side.
Right, right.
And so I always felt safe in my home. I always had someone to go to and turn to. I never felt threatened. And if I did get a bump along the way, I'm coming home and my nervous system comes right back into regulation. That's, it was beautiful. A perfect system. Yeah, and that's kept me healthy all my life.
People need to know that it's never too late to start.
No.
If your home is dysfunctional or you're having issues, marriage issues, that you can start today. You know, maybe this conversation has inspired someone to fix what's bugging them, let's say, right? Yep. What the problem is. And we can't just keep sweeping it under the rug. We've got to face whatever it is. But the children are waiting. You know, your husband is waiting. Your wife is waiting for things to be right.
And yep.
Spouses are very patient. We're all patient with our children and with our spouses, but you deserve to have, like Dr. Wood, you know, a home that's safe, secure. It's so important. And one of the things I'm trying to teach, when you hear the word IQ, what comes to mind?
You're talking about intelligence, right?
Right. So some people are gifted with a high intelligence, you know, high IQ, but we could also learn to be smart. We don't have to have the highest IQ in the class. I teach wellness IQ, and that's done through information.
Sure. Okay?
Marriage IQ. You look at marriages that are successful, we can teach that. Yep. You look at people who have a healthy brain or healthy mental health. There's mental IQ. Financial IQ. Why do some people get wealthy and some others don't? So my thing is wellness IQ, and that's one of the reasons I reached out to you. If there's something that I'm sharing here that enhances what you're doing and gives people more intelligence. You know, in the Bible, I've read where it says, my people perish for lack of knowledge. So why was the Israelites perishing? They weren't using the knowledge. Why was that generation perishing? You don't have to perish in health. It doesn't matter which area, whether it be mental, psychological, physical, or spiritual. And, you know, we have a timeline of when we could be proactive, but there's going to come a time you can't be proactive anymore.
Yep.
So now is the time. You know, I'm not going to wait to get Alzheimer's when I know there's things I can do. A small dose of lithium that Life Extension has discovered works to prevent the breakdown of the tau proteins and the beta amyloids. Look at that. Who would have thought? When did you hear about lithium? What comes to mind?
Usually heart stuff.
But, or remember manic depression?
Yeah.
They gave people back in the 50s lithium, high doses though.
Yep.
But a microgram, we have discovered that you can prevent the breakdown of these tau proteins, but it has to start now, in other words. And so the same thing with your science, it's starting now.
Yeah, for sure. So this has been fabulous. I love what we've been sharing. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, because I strongly encourage you to reach out and get what you're providing as well. So we're all in this together to help as many people as we can. How do people reach out to you if they want to follow what you're able to help them with?
Sure. My phone number is 407-342-4956. That's the office number. Or you can email me at tbcproductions@outlook.com. TBC is total body care. tbcproductions@outlook.com.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you so much for your time. I look forward to connecting up a little bit more and sharing more about what we're doing together. And if you have any questions, right, you know, feel free to reach out to us as well. You've been listening to another episode of You Must Be Out of Your Mind. And there it is.